And welcome to episode 43 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about gamification. We've talked about game rules on the table. This week we'll talk about bringing game ideas into our real lives. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Giljam, Shane Paul, George, and Adam Harrison. And thank you to our newest patron, John Lewis. Also, a huge thanks to all of our other patrons as well.
Thanks, Josh. So we are live all the time, so we don't re-record the intros, no matter how bad Josh does at it.
Yeah, I know.
So news and announcements. We have, this is the last week to enter our Mechs versus Minions giveaway. If you have not entered by now, go out to the website, tabletopgametalk.com, click on the giveaways button, fill out the form, and you'll be entered. The deadline is Wednesday, June 14th, which happens to be the same day that we're all going to be driving to Origins, which is our next announcement. Our next show is going to be a live show at Origins, and it's on Friday, the 16th. Of June in room A215.
Woo! So, yep. I'm excited.
At 6 p.m.
So it's on the second floor where all the seminar stuff things are. So you have to take an escalator up and then find room 215. And we will be there. We will have buttons and pins for anyone who... Buttons and pins are basically the same things. We'll have pins and magnets for anyone who comes to the show. And we will be giving away at least one or two t-shirts at the show as well. So I'm really excited about this. It's our first live show.
This is crazy.
I know.
I'm hoping like at least one person turns up.
I said we have Sydney, we have Spencer, so we'll have two.
Yeah, but they don't count.
Oh,
they okay. Don't.
Yeah, right. We don't. Yeah. I'm not counting them. One other person. I want one other person.
So we're gonna be like going up and down the hall saying, "Come to our show,
please,
please come, please come." Speaking of live shows, and we hope this one turns out fairly well because we're doing another one at Gen Con. So if you can't make it to Origins, hopefully you can make it to Gen Con. That's August 18th at 6 o'clock on Friday. So both of those are exciting. Gamehole Con is even after that. That's November, the first weekend of November. And I just submitted all of our events we're going to be running there. So there we actually have a table. We'll have in their podcast row, and we'll be running somewhere around 15 different events. So I have two tables, one for long games and one for shorter games. So we have a couple 4-hour slots each day for the long games and several 2-hour slots for the shorter games. These are going to be games that are relatively popular, things that we've talked about before. If something comes up between now and then is like really cool that we have get our hands on, I might sneak that in there too. So, but yeah, that was pretty much all day yesterday, like planning out how we're going to do that.
I'm looking forward to it. I have no idea what the hype train is for the newest games in Origins, so I'm looking forward to getting my head in the game and finding out.
Yeah. Well, the thread is live on BoardGameGeek now, so... The thread for our Origins live show is going to be, hey, tell us what we should be looking out for. Yeah. Now, Christy's already reached out to me and sent me her list of things that she's looking at.
Oh, I need to see that.
Yeah, I think Century Spice Road is probably my number one game that I want to track down and either play and or just buy outright. It's supposed to be a little bit deeper of a game, but kind of that splendor feel where you're buying things so you can build up kind of a tableau so you can buy bigger stuff. And it's the first in a series from how I understand it. So anyway, That one, hopefully we'll be talking about more next week.
I do love Splendor. I'm addicted to that on the phone version at the moment.
So I'm really looking forward to that. And there's a few others that I'm really looking forward to. But I want to hear what you guys have as well. We will be getting there. Like I said, we'll be getting there Wednesday. Josh and I will be getting there early on Wednesday, early being by early afternoon on Wednesday. Kitty's coming later with Spencer, and they're getting there like really late Wednesday, but they'll be there for Thursday. But that gives us Thursday and Friday to go through the dealer's hall and the demo areas to check out as many things as we can. But your help, if you have something that's like, you must check out this game, let me know. And if you happen to be a publisher or a designer that's looking to show a game, certainly email us, tabletopgametalk@gmail.com, and we will set up a time. So I will have at least one press badge. I might have two, so I'll have some access to rooms for interviews if that comes up. So on to Kickstarter, speaking of publishers and stuff. I think I'm not going to kickstart anything between now and our next show.
Because you're going to buy a ton of games at Origins.
I may buy a ton of games at Origins, and I want to minimize the amount of off-topic we have at the live show. But these two, well, there's three I want to talk about. Two that I've actually kickstarted, and one I want to give a heads up, and that I will likely kickstart maybe between now and then, but we'll see. So Lords of Hellas, that's H-E-L-L-A-S. This one is a miniatures territory control game. It's already funded over $1 million. I think its initial goal was somewhere in the 60,000 range. So it's doing quite well. But it is a Greek battles. So kind of like mythology type battles.
Okay.
But where the gods are aliens with technological gifts. So the idea of the game is you're playing, you know, the I think
ancient
it's the
Greeks, aliens.
Ancient, yeah. And the ancient aliens come down and are helping you out. So you're building monuments to them. You're fighting with like technology mixed with like ancient technology.
I mean, if you read the right YouTube, if you watch the right YouTube videos, that's apparently what happened.
Yeah.
So some people think so. No. Anyway.
I'm not saying it's aliens.
But it's aliens. Right. So this one looked really cool to me. There's a few things I really liked about it. It's asymmetric. So anything asymmetric is good. It's territory control with quests. Or you can screw the territory control, go out and kill monsters. You can also build monuments. There's four different ways you can win the game. So you can control territories, kill monsters, build temples, and then control the most cities when a monument is completed. And the monuments are these miniatures that have five pieces. So you keep adding pieces to them as they build up. So I'm looking forward to this one. This is done by the same people that did War of Mime. War of Mine, the board game.
I want to see War of Mime.
War of Mimes. Can you get through the glass box?
Right. No. Strangle them with the invisible rope.
Yeah. Something. So I have not played that. But again, they have a track record and a lot of money. So that's Lords of Hellas. I was told, great feedback, by the way, that when I talk about a game, I should repeat the game name at the end of it. Right. So you guys have to keep me honest on that and make sure I do. So Lords of Hellas, that's the first one. The other one is an expansion, but also a game that everyone should get. So this is the Deception Undercover Allies. This is the expansion to Deception Murder in Hong Kong.
Ooh, I love that game.
Yes. So they're adding two more roles and then a bunch more cards. And
I'm excited.
Yeah. So for this one, you can get just the expansion. Or you can get the game with the expansion. And if you get the game with the expansion, I think it's like in the $80 range, but you have everything then. But if you just want the expansion, I think it's like the $20 to $30 range.
I want to say the in a nutshell is kind of like, it's kind of like a social deduction / clue mashup kind of thing.
Yes.
Would you say?
Yeah. I can go with that.
Yeah. And it's so much fun. Yeah,
like, and it's not really that much social deduction because Kitty likes it.
Right.
It's not that much social deduction. It's more just regular deduction. You right. have actual information you're basing this
off
of. That's
always nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there is some social aspect because there's one person who's deciding what information to give and you're trying to guess a person so they can give kind of an argument. But there is also actual like concrete evidence that you can...
Yep. Well, the focus is more on the cards in front of you than the person who has the cards in front of them. Because even if I know Josh is the murderer, and maybe like there's no doubt Josh is the murderer, I still have to know what the weapon and what the clue was. Otherwise, I can't win. And with that, I have to use the game mechanics. I can't just say, all right, Josh, was it the poison? Did you If I point at this and just watch his eyes, and, hey, that might work, actually.
It might work. It might work for some people, but I'm a damn good actor.
But not on everyone.
Yep.
So...
But yeah, Deception Murder in Hong Kong is one of our favorites, yep. I'd say.
If you don't own it, you should.
And the expansion is called Undercover Allies.
Undercover Allies, yes.
Nice.
So, and the last one, I have not backed this one yet, full disclosure. This one, I've playtested it, and I was reading through the rule books, and they've done a lot of work over the last few weeks, so I've been kind of helping these guys out. And I'm going to back it. It's just hasn't made it to my click yet. I have to... do a video.
You sound really guilty about that.
I know. I feel really bad. I'm like,
but don't feel bad. This is why you have a habit.
But I just want to call it out. It's called Biologic. So this is just a description. Microscopic domination inside the human body. Compete as unique engineered superbugs. Explore, cultivate, fight to survive and dominate this inner body micro universe. So this one has, it's kind of a hex board that gets created. And you're playing one of six different bacteria, superbugs, nanobugs, different things like that. So each bug has like a specific power that they have. And you're trying to, it's area control to a certain extent. As you take over different portions of the body, you open up different colors that allow you to take over other portions of the body. Each time you take things over, they may or may not affect the things around them, or maybe when you just reveal the tile. So as you pull tiles, like where you put the tiles can have some effect on things. You can fight other bugs. So it's like, Josh is getting too strong. I'm going to attack him. Right. And if I win, I get to take some of his strength away from him and add it to
Ebola
mine.
Ebola versus the Black Death. Fight.
Exactly.
Do you win by killing someone?
Not exactly. Or at least it's not called out that specifically. However, there are four Omega tiles, like the heart and the brain and such. So once you infect those areas, or you infect, you pick whether you want two or four, depending on the length of the game. And once you infect those areas, that's when the game ends. And then you count up all your points, adding all the different pieces.
It sounds so morbid. Once you've infected the brain or the heart, that's when the game ends. Yep. Like, oh, that's scary.
So this kind of goes along with Plague Inc. So if you've ever played that game on the iPad or the iPhone, if you haven't, check it out. It's amazing.
Okay.
But in that game, you are a bug that's trying to essentially destroy the entire world. Right. And you have these different mutations and things like that.
It's like you're the opposite of Pandemic.
Yes, it is the opposite of Pandemic.
You're trying to cure the diseases. You're trying to be the diseases.
It is so good. But this game kind of follows along with that concept where it's like you're playing the other side. You're playing the bad guys.
Right.
But, you know, a virus has to live too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. Definitely.
So that is Biologic. Check it out. All right, let's go on.
Let's get to some feedback about past episodes. If you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
Yes, and we have something from Sam. He says, general comment one. I enjoyed that you did a couples episode, even though it wasn't meant to be one. It would be interesting to do another couples show to hear the differences and similarities on views towards games between and within couples.
Yeah, we accidentally did a couples show.
Yeah, we were just like, who's in the building that can do the episode right now? Oh, it's two couples.
Yeah, but I kind of like this idea of like following it up and have the couple. Now, if we were going to do this, I might try to do all six of us. It would be a round table thing.
Madness.
Yeah, and the sound would be a little different. I'd just put a mic right in the middle of the table and just let it go.
It'd be a good experiment.
Yeah. Sounds like a side chat, maybe.
I think it might be a side chat. When couples collide.
Too many loud personalities at one table, I'm thinking. Yeah. So he goes on. It's a question about the House Rules and Variants episode. You didn't really touch on modular variants that are already in the box. I'm thinking of games like Arkham Horror, Cosmic Encounter, Dead of Winter, Carcassonne and such. The expansions always have new rules variants that can be implemented on top of the existing mechanics. And in many cases, the expansions have multiple new rules that you can pick and choose to use or not. What's your take on that? Similarly, what's your take on games like 504 and Card City XL that sell themselves on modularity and the fact that there are hundreds of variants to the rules straight out of the box? Yep.
Sam, we missed you because your questions are great. So, and that's true. We did not touch on when a publisher makes variants to their own games. I did touch a little bit on saying I don't like when the designer is like wishy-washy on what the rules are.
Yes.
But I think this is different.
Yeah.
So, like, Carcassonne, when you're adding new expansions and new pieces and new rules, what do you think of that?
I think we talked about this in our expansions episode a little bit, where there was, like, when I'm playing one expansion, that's fun. When I'm playing two expansions, that's fun but a little tricky. And then there was, we were playing the Princess and the Dragon version, and there's a table where if you're playing with which expansions, which pieces affect how move it. And it was like a flow chart that you had to follow. And I think that it can just get to be a bit too much.
A matrix of how the rules collide.
Yeah.
Yep. So, and I think, I mean, Cosmic Encounters is one that does this as well, where, you know, it's always having, every expansion adds a new rule, adds new races, adds possible new cards. You can choose to add things in, pull things out. I don't actually mind it all that much. And I think it's just because if the publisher says, hey, this is an official something, then you can go to someone and say, okay, we play Cosmic Encounters and we play with the Ion expansion. And we use that rule, or we use this particular rule here. And you can go out and you can say, okay, the publisher officially supports this. It's not a mystery. Maybe I've never played with that, but it's not like someone's just making something up on the spot. So I'm kind of okay with that. Are you guys familiar with 504?
I was about to ask about these two, this 504 or Card City XL. I've not heard of them or played them or anything.
Yeah. So Card City XL, if it's what I'm thinking, it's basically just a mix and match of different... When you put different cards in there, it allows you... The game will play differently. It's okay. Kind of like a Dominion where you every game you play, you're going to play with a different 10 arrangement of cards. You never play the same board twice in Dominion.
Right.
I mean, I suppose you could, but it's not necessarily that way. But you can do it in tournaments where you can say, okay, this is the board and how we're going to play it. But I'll talk 504 just briefly. 504 is... a game, it's almost hard to call it a game because the way the instructions are set up is there's a top page, middle page, and bottom page. Kind of like the dolls where you have it, here's the head, here's the body, here's the legs. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Right?
So it's that, but the top will describe like one part of the game. The middle will describe another part of the game, and the bottom will describe another part of the game. And you can flip through. I think there's 9 of each one, and then when you 9 times 9 times 9 is 504.
Okay.
So there's that many different game combinations in the box.
Wow.
So setup, basic rules, and scoring, I think, is how they split it up. So how you set up the game, how you play the game, how you score the game, all of these different combinations will change.
This sounds really familiar now.
It was a big... They had a lot of hype about a year and a half ago. When it finally hit the table, I don't know that it kept that hype. And maybe because it's just too inconsistent. You know, I like game number 387.
Right. And,
but you're playing 392? What? No way. I'm not playing that. You know, so it's one of those games where you can't really play the same thing twice if you want to explore everything. And you may not want to play it 500 times.
Right. And so you'd have to play it 504 times just to like know how to really compare all of them. And by that time, you might have forgotten
By that time, you may have like, if you're on a desert island and you can only have one game, maybe this is
this is the game to bring.
But yeah. So
if you like variety, yeah.
Yeah. I think the short answer to this is I am okay with published variants just because there's a standard to it. I think that's the main
thing. Like that's the opposite of what you said last time.
Variance is different than not making decisions in the rules. So when you're adding on something, it's like, here's this addition. That's fine. We just got done playing Near and Far.
Which I loved.
Which was great. But we played Mode 0 of 4. Mode 0 is the introduction adventure. Then you have Mode 1, which is the arcade. Mode 2, which is character mode. Mode 3, which is campaign mode. And... the game, though, itself is basically the same game. Once you play the intro one, there's some advanced rules that you can add in. And then once you've done that, you would never go back and not put those in.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like that's just kind of a stage thing. And then as far as arcade mode, this is just, well, we don't want to advance our campaign. So let's play arcade mode, which just gets rid of the story aspect of it. You draw cards instead.
Yeah.
Character and campaign, just different stories to be told. You'd actually play them both. So even though there's a lot of variants there, they all have a purpose for why they're there.
I actually really liked the way that Near and Far did this because I think it is a campaign style, almost legacy, but not quite, because it does have the different kinds of play that gives you the ability to play through the game so many more times than something like Pandemic Legacy.
Yep. And it's competitive. So rarely do you see campaign that is competitive in the same way that this is. So as you play through, in the campaign mode and the story modes, you actually will improve your characters from game to game. But you reset everything. You just have, you know, some bumps that you've earned from the previous game.
I like that the loser can get the platypus as a rule.
Yeah, so there's a platypus. You start out with a cat or dog. And if you want to use the optional platypus, then the person who got the least number of points in the last game, which would be me in this case, would start with the platypus.
How many points did you get, Chris?
So Sydney won. I think she had 46.
She had 46.
You got second with 39.
39.
Spencer came in a distant third with 15. I had 1 point.
You should check out the YouTube because like Kitty has this look of glee in her face because normally Chris like trounces all of us because he knows the game the best and he's really good at games.
I was exploring.
Right. But it's
Chris,
just...
It took some risks that did not pay off.
Yep. And we skipped a step. So there's a drafting step. And we said, we don't know what to draft. It's our first game. So we'll just keep the cards that were dealt. The same thing I do with Blood Rage, just keep the cards that were dealt. Sure. But you score negative points if you have cards in hand. And I didn't get rid of any of my cards.
And you picked up more cards.
Yeah. So speaking of, let's just go on to the questions, shall we?
All right. Let's go to a question from one of our listeners. This is a question that won't fill an entire show topic, but we think is interesting nonetheless. Today's question, we have two questions today. Our first one comes from Steven. Question about gaming conventions. If you want to start going to them, do you recommend starting small before going to big ones like Origins or Gen Con? Or does it really not matter? Which offers the best experience to people wanting to play and try out new games there?
So Josh, you are basically like the use case for this. Yeah. So what did you think? So last year I brought you to Origins first and I brought you to Gen Con.
Yep.
And have I brought you to a smaller convention?
No, yet? Actually, I've only been to those two. So yeah, I've yet to experience the smaller con. But you're right. That was my first two conventions ever. And I think big ones are great to jump into. Maybe Gen Con is the biggest. How many people was it again?
Like 70,000.
Right. And maybe that would have been a little bit too overwhelming as my first one. But to be honest, just the variety that's on offer is the thing that makes me say, go to a big one. It's fine. Because if you want to play a ton of new games, there's going to be more games at the big one. And it's going to be better. There's going to be better resources, more demo tables, all things like that. So I thought it was great. Loved it. Just played so many new games. Highly recommend going to big ones.
So you have, Kitty, you have not gone to any gaming conventions, but you do book conventions of different sizes. So what is your take if you were to bring someone new to a book convention?
I would say go mid-size to start. There's usually like the huge one, and that can be overwhelming.
Yeah, I'd
there's agree with like that. You can get paralyzed by there's too many choices to make. There's too much going on. If you go to a small one, you can feel like, oh, this is it.
Yep.
There's not a lot to do. If you don't know people there, they can feel a little bit like you're on the outside of the in group. It can feel a little, I'm not sure, like you're shut out.
Yeah.
In a way. But if you go to a mid-size one, there's enough going on. It's not overwhelming. There's enough spaces to do things, enough stuff to explore that you feel like, oh yeah, like I'm having fun doing this. But you're not just like standing in the middle of this chaos like, I don't even know where to go.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been going to conventions for pretty much my entire life that I can think of. Even in high school, actually middle school, I think is when I went to my first gaming convention. And that was in the basement of a church. You know, so it's like super, super small. They were just doing like a magic tournament or something. All the way to Gen Con, which is like mega huge. The smaller conventions, I would say don't travel for those. Like, because you could show up at a convention that's 500 people and you paid to travel there, you're paying for a hotel room, and now you have, you know, there's 500 people and it's all gaming, but it's actually kind of almost intimidating because if you're not gaming, there's not much else to do. And if you're not comfortable sitting down and playing with strangers, those small conventions, that intimacy can actually turn into not feeling part of the inner circle, like yeah. Kitty mentioned. Where Gen Con, I think anyone can actually have a good time at Gen Con, but it's so overwhelming that you can walk away with like, I have no idea what to do, which is why I normally recommend Origins is my favorite intro convention.
It was so good.
Yeah. It's about 10 to 12,000 people. The dealer's hall is big enough where you can just get lost in there the entire time playing demos. You never even have to play anything. The demo room is great. It's small enough where you can talk to different publishers, meet people. There's gaming all the time. It's a 24-hour convention, so you're never going to be bored there. So if at all possible, Origins is the one travel to, go to, have a great time there. Otherwise, yeah, Gen Con. And if you have a local convention, if something is like, oh, I can just drive there during the day, by all means, go do it. Like,
I always recommend bringing a buddy too.
Yeah.
It's so much more fun if you have somebody that you know you can talk to already that has similar interests and goals for the convention as you. I have two sisters and I can go to a book convention with either one of them, but I can't go with both of them because I can adjust my expectations to like one person's and they're both similar enough to me. But if I have them both there, I'm just like, torn between like, where am I? Like, you both want to do completely different things. And I'm just like,
Yeah. Yeah. Having one person to hang out with is great. Like when we go, we're going to have five of us. Cause, Kitty, Spencer, me, Sydney, and Josh are going to go. And my first thing is we'll be together at certain points, but otherwise it's like, just split up and explore. Yeah. It's so much easier to just, and that's another piece of advice, split up and explore. Because if you try to stick with the group together, you're, first of all, you're going to move at a snail's pace because that's what groups do. You're never going to be doing what you want to do. Meet back up. Say, okay, let's meet back up for lunch in a couple hours or dinner in a couple hours.
Or join up for specific games. Like, oh, we really wanted to try that new Harry Potter game. Let's meet at 2 and all play that together.
Exactly.
For specific things. But then, like you say, go and do your stuff.
I'm sticking with my one buddy.
One buddy.
I like to have a buddy. I don't like to be on my own.
Well, split up into pairs.
Into pairs. Mm. Like 3 people maybe you can do. Chris is fine going off on his own. Oh, yeah. So we'll just... And Spencer's going to be working from the hotel for some of those days.
Well, so. And we're not going to—I'm not going to leave you out to dry either, because this is your first convention. So I'll give you the
please
tour.
Don't.
All right, this next one is the question's longer than the answer, but it's a good question. So,
all right, this may sound simple.
Oh, but, this is from Sam.
Oh, from Sam. Thank you, Sam. This may sound simple, but the last 2 episodes have had me wondering, what is your definition for a mass market game? Games like Monopoly, Scrabble, Clue are easily mass market games. They can be found in any store that would sell games. What about Catan, Ticket to Ride, King of Tokyo, Small World, and other games that are common in mass market stores like Walmart, Target, Barnes & Noble? Have they moved into the echelon of mass market? I bought Pentago, Makikoro, and Suro at Target and at Barnes & Noble. Are those mass market games?
So we'll stop there. There's a little bit more, but it's basically the same thing. Although he does ask about Amazing Labyrinth, which we'll get to. Mass market is, I don't know that there's an official definition to it, but as I use it, it is, well, certainly anything that's Hasbro, Milton Bradley, Parker Brothers, anything that's a game division of a large toy company, that's mass market. They will admit it's mass market. They're attempting to push this out. If they're running 100,000 plus copies of print run, that's mass market. Honestly, at this point, I would say anything that you can find in Walmart or Target are mass market. Yeah. Not necessarily Barnes & Noble.
I'd say Barnes & Noble is 50-50.
Right. But you can, because you can find a lot of designer games in Barnes & Noble these days. But Target, Walmart, Ticket to Ride is definitely mass market right now. King of Tokyo, Catan, you know, those are mass market games. They're just not by those big toy companies, so you don't hear them. But I'll let you answer the Amazing Labyrinth question.
I don't know that it was ever mass market. It was just something that my family had. It's kind of a old designer game, I'd say. It's from Ravensburger, which mostly does puzzles, I think.
Yep.
But they distributed some board games in the US, but it's a European game, so...
Yeah, I played the German version of it before you told me about the American Labyrinth one. So I'm assuming it's like big there, but it's very simple. We've said before, you know, you can get kids to play that game. So
yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah, and we've talked about it in previous episodes, but Amazing Labyrinth is a game where you're basically trying to run around in a maze that's always changing, because you change the maze and then you move your piece. You change the maze, then you move your piece, and you're trying to collect all of the different treasures on your list. All right, let's go into topics on gamification. And we should reward ourselves anytime we are under 20 minutes and off topic. In this case, we would fail. So that's a meta thing. So here we go.
In this episode, we're talking about gamification. What ideas can we pull from games to help motivate ourselves in our everyday lives? Or more generally, how can gaming improve non-gamings?
Non-gamings.
Interesting.
Improve our non-gaming life.
Oh, I see.
There you go.
I'm with you now.
So this is a topic that Josh requested.
I did.
A long time ago. Mm. And we're like, okay, fine. We'll throw Josh a bone. He's going to be in town. So
right. Well, I used to be an educator. You know, I used to teach. I taught abroad English as a second language for a couple of years and a little bit in the UK. And so, you know, I always got excited by the power of gamification. And, you know, especially, you know, one of the big areas that gamification often bleeds into is education. And there's all this talk and hype of we should be using these days games to allow kids to learn things and make it more interesting and more interactive. But also, you know, the other big area is kind of the habit setting realm, where there's so many apps these days where, you know, you can reward yourself for doing whatever activity it is or whatever goals you're looking for. So I think those are the two big areas. The thing that I'm wondering is just how well do we think it's being done at the moment? Like, do you feel like there's great examples of gamifications right now?
I think there's amazing examples of it. Now, I will say, we're tabletop game talk. Gamification is kind of throughout. So we're going to talk about this in such a way where look at the board games and what we're talking about and how the board games... Sydney wants me to do an episode on board game trends, which we will do after Origins and Gen Con. We're going to do this trending thing. But I think you can start to see it now. How board games are changing to follow these gamification concepts that we traditionally put into our electronic devices, whether it be video games or Fitbits or Apple Watches or all those things. And then you start looking at how those things apply into board games, it all comes back together. So that's just my...
But also, I see it more as well as, you know, there are certain mechanics within board games that are also present in the gamification trends in general. Yes. And that kind of interests me as well.
So the biggest gamification thing in my life right now is I have an Apple Watch. I'm an Apple person. Apple's my day job. I have all the Apple stuff in my night
job. He's got a blueprint on his wall of, is it the first?
Yeah.
It's the patent of the iPhone.
With Steve Jobs' signature on it. Like, you are such a geek.
So I like it. So I have an Apple Watch. And I always tell people, it's like, oh, I have to fill my circles. So even tonight, I don't have all my circles filled. So after we record, I'm going to go and take probably a 2 or 3 mile walk so I can fill all my circles and get all my exercise ranks. I wouldn't be doing that if it weren't for these three little circles on the face of my watch. The middle one says, you must stand at least 1 minute for 12 hours out of the day. So doesn't matter what 12 hours, just for 12 hours, stand a minute within one. So that's my middle circle. My outer or my the inner circle is that. The middle circle is exercise. You must have your heart rate above a certain point and be moving for 30 minutes a day. It doesn't have to all be at the same time. It's just watching and paying attention for when that happens. And the outer circle is burning a number of calories per day. And you can set that goal to whatever you want. The other ones are hard-coded. And every day I am wanting to fill these circles. I will literally, at 11:30 at night, I've done this before, Sydney loves telling us, I will stop a game we're playing and say, you guys talk amongst yourselves, go watch an episode of whatever. I have to go quickly run around the block so that I can fill my circles. And then come back and I'll finish the game.
That's dedication.
That's the gamification thing.
Yeah.
And it's not just the circles. It's the fact that I have about a dozen people that are watching my circles.
My mother is a huge Fitbit user, and it's not circles, it's dots, and she's got to fill her dots, and she's actually, it does give you the ability to change the number of steps that you need to get to achieve your dot goal, and hers has gone up and up and up. But I will see her, you know, 8:30 at night, because that's her 11:30.
Yep.
Just walking in place in her kitchen. She walks back and forth across her house, because... sometimes the weather's not good. Sometimes whatever it is, you can't get outside. She just goes in circles around her own house.
Yeah, you got to get the steps in.
And that one gives you the fun. I don't know if Apple Watch does anything to like shower your achievement, like yay, but you get your little like buzz with your Fitbit.
Oh yeah, Gloria loves that. Whenever her thing buzzes, she's like, oh look, I did it.
I get buzzes when other people do it. Sydney gets buzzes when I do it. And you get little medals. So as you flip up, there's this, like the spinning medal. So if you have a streak or if you hit 200% of your move goal today. So you get medals for all of these things as well, which is another form of gamification, is you're earning awards by doing this, which is why I do it every day, because even if someone wasn't watching me, I want my streak bonus.
I can see that. Yeah, I think there's it's interesting because I haven't really been caught by the Fitbit thing. Like Gloria gave me her old hand-me-down one because she got a better one, and I used it for a bit, but I wasn't as sucked into the Fitbit thing. Maybe I hadn't linked up to enough of my friends. I think that's probably the key, having that social aspect. And obviously that's a big part of gamification, kind of like, oh, what are my friends doing? But I don't know. Maybe I just need more of a rich kind of variety of the game element to it than just points.
Yeah.
We've talked before about our game types, our gamer types, and I like to win. I'm very competitive. I think I gave up on Fitbit because I felt like I was never winning.
That's it. That's why, that's it. You've nailed it for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm very similar to you in that way.
And I didn't have the time, ability, lifestyle to actually
compete and win.
Uh-huh. And I could challenge my friends who are at similar levels to me, mm-hmm. but I just felt like that was so much more work than, you know, being at the top of that leaderboard or even having a chance to be at the top of that leaderboard.
And that's why I think Apple has something with the circles, because it's not a competition. You're not ranked against other people. Ah. It's just, did you close your circles or not?
Did you do it?
Right.
And your circles, okay, two of them are hard-coded, but one of them you can adjust.
One of them you can just adjust. And so when, like, people can see, like, my daily burn goal is 500 calories.
Right.
It can range from anything. Someone else has, like, 700 calories. If they close their circle, I see that their circle's closed. If I close my circle, they see that my circle's closed. If you look into the details, you can see the actual calories. But that's not really what we're thinking. We're just thinking, oh, all of my friends closed their circles. I got an actual text from a friend of mine saying, hey, you were the only person that didn't close your circles today. And I'm like, I'm still on my walk. Check it again in 20 minutes.
I do like with Fitbit, though, that the actual, like, it takes into account the distance and you get the fun badges for, like, you've walked so many miles, like, you've now walked to San Francisco, or you've walked the length of the Great Wall of China, like, all these different fun kind of real life badges
that
you can earn. But it does take into account, you know, how many steps you have taken versus how many steps other people have taken, and it's not fair. Yeah.
So I think
I agree. I mean, I was mentioning this, because I think the idea of the competitiveness kind of bleeds into this player types idea that I was telling you guys about. So there's something called Richard Bartle's player types. And the four player types that he's, kind of categorized is killer, achiever, socializer, explorer. And it's kind of like what makes something fun for you. For me and Kitty, it's the competitive nature. And I think that would fall into the achievement category. It says, you know, players are giving themselves game related goals and vigorously set.
I think we fall into the killer category, because we want to win at the expense of other people. We will, like,
I suppose.
The achievement is more like, oh, I'm just happy to earn these badges. I just want to get to the next level.
Yeah, you guys are killers.
No, but hang on, because I disagree. I disagree that being competitive falls into killer, because it says players use tools provided by the game to cause distress to other players where permitted, usually acquire some sort of weapon or something. It's more about crushing.
So as he defines killers, it's more of a griefing type of person.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I don't want to just win. I want to win, but I also want to see you eat it. Absolutely. Right. And I want
I don't want you to achieve your goal.
Yeah.
I so much want to win.
Yeah. And in fact, it's kind of that Schadenfreude thing. These people, like, almost want to, like, really grind the other people down. I am way too conscientious about other people's feelings to do that. I'm like, oh, no. I want to win, but I don't want to fit other people to feel, you know, too bad. Like, I'm
just
not going to, like,
you apologize while you're doing the thing.
That's right. Gonna... I try and win graciously.
All right. So we have the idea that we have goals and filling circles, getting your dots. We have the concept of sharing that information with your friends, which holds you accountable.
And that's the social gamer. So that was one of the four as well. Yeah.
Well, and if you think about that, I actually used the podcast for the first, 3 months of the year as a gamification method to encourage me to lose weight over time.
Your weight loss, yeah. Yes.
You know, because now I'm held accountable to the audience. And if I'm like, I don't want to let them down. So that's a way of gamifying my goal.
By the way, I've really plateaued since we stopped announcing.
Yeah, me too. I'm like totally like completely flat.
Yeah, exactly. So
we need to get back on.
Yeah, we need to at least announce it to each other or something.
I'm going to make you guys, keep putting it in the show notes. We don't have to say it, but I'm making you put it in the document every week.
A good app I found, because I've been looking for a long time for an app that allows me to challenge people on any goal that I set. And I couldn't really find that.
Did you find one?
I did.
I've been looking for this
It's only come out in the last 2 years, and I was really happy with it. It's called Goalify, and you can set what the goal is, what the metric is, how many of whatever thing it is, and send it to your friend, and you're both doing it. Because I wanted to learn to touch type because we'd never learned in school, and a friend of mine's a journalist and he didn't touch type. I'm like, this is crazy. This is your profession and you don't touch type. Like, you will be so much faster at typing. Like, that's what you do. And so now we challenge each other on this thing.
I learned how to type by playing a Mario typing game.
And there's a zombie one, the House of the Dead keyboard version, the typing
Dreamcast,
of the Dead.
So yes. Good. Yeah. I learned how to type in middle school because I really wanted to work with computers, and I learned how to type on a typewriter. That's how old I am. But it was an electric typewriter, at least.
Your old granddad.
But yeah, so those types of apps, and actually Sean mentioned one called Habitica.
Yes.
Which is a role-playing game that gamifies certain tasks and you get level up and experience. And
I played this with my sister. Actually, both my sisters. We were in a, I think it's a guild or group something.
Yeah.
I had a really hard time with this because I felt like it was almost too broad and it let you type anything you wanted and you just got points for checking off boxes and I could put in whatever BS goals I wanted. Yeah. Like I got
and
out
give
of
yourself
bed today.
A thousand points for it as well.
No, you only get like
is limited.
But you can put anything. Took a shower today, washed my hands.
I mean that can be good and bad. You said yourself
brushing your teeth is the like one that it comes with already in there. Right. It's like really?
Some people they need it.
So let's talk about those for a second because I think and I tried using these really early on when iPhone first started coming out with apps. Like that was one of the very first things on there. I found that the task of adding tasks and then reporting back, that part alone was so discouraging that I didn't.
It's a lot of effort to kind of document all that stuff.
If I'm already doing that, then I don't need the app to help me in my everyday life.
Yeah,
you know, it's like I'm just adding this extra stuff.
For me, because I had one that's similar, and it was called Habit RPG, and the graphics are nice, but it's very simple. You know, you write these tasks that you're going to do, you give them some points, and as you click them off, your character levels up, and you maybe. Like your character just moves through this like monochrome landscape and you get some items, but that's it. And it wasn't, I just felt like I wanted story to the world. I wanted to be uncovering like new little side quests or something. And I wanted the flavor and the RP or the sugar to make that medicine go down, be more engaging, more immersive, like a real game is. And it just felt like a little paper thin stuff added on top of it. And it wasn't very deep or good.
So I'm going to talk about my favorite gamification. Run Zombies.
Oh.
It is it's basically a radio show that you get to listen to during your run. And it gives you little like prompts and clues and you can pick up items with your run. But it doesn't use your GPS location or anything. It's just you turn it on and it takes you at your word. Because I use a treadmill, so it's not... I'm not going anywhere.
Track the distance or
anything,
right?
Yeah. So you just say, yep, I'm running for this time while the app is on. And it's really fun. And it has a story that you move through the story as you, every time you run, you turn it on. And yeah, I suppose you could just, you know, turn it on and listen to it. But it wouldn't be as much fun because it switches back and forth to your, you can put a playlist in there or they have other ways like to listen to stuff. In between the story segments. So it's only probably 5 minutes of actual story, but split up over, I think it's 25-minute run.
So do
time.
You only get the bits of story if you've run a certain amount of distance?
No.
Or is it just, it's just randomly?
It's just time-based.
Oh, it just pops up. Okay.
Yeah, it's usually one or two songs from a playlist that you've put together. And then in between your songs, it plays new, like... Oh no, they're behind us, or we have to get past this fence. We need to go north over to distract the zombies. And you're a runner for like a colony base, and you can build your little base with the things that you get, your little...
I like that it's kind of morphing into that kind of geolocation thing, a bit like Pokemon Go. You know, you're outside and running like you would be running from zombies in real life. You know, I did one of those immersive experiences where they had actors all through this area in London and you would go to different locations and you'd be like in this, you know, dark parking lot and there's actors like playing as zombies running after you. And it's that kind of fusion of like, it, now I'm actually experiencing the game in what feels like real life. And hopefully VR will help kind of heighten that in the future because
I think AR is probably our better bet.
Augmented reality.
Yeah. Augment versus virtual, because virtual shuts you off from the real world.
Yes.
But if you had AR goggles or your phone or anything like that.
And you see the zombies behind you.
Right. Then it becomes something different where it's like incorporates it into the real world.
Yes.
So Sydney actually uses, there's accounting, so she's studying for a CPA, and Clash of Clans, a very popular game. Well, there is, I forget the name, it's like Clash of Accountants or something like that.
Right.
But it's not Clash, they don't rip it off that much, but the gameplay is completely Clash of Clans.
Okay.
And the way that you get build buildings is you answer questions for the CPA. So this is like gamifying this idea. It's like, oh, I need to build a bigger bank. Oh, I need to get more resource storage here or that. But she has to answer questions to get that to happen. When you challenge somebody else, you answer a list of questions that's sent to that other person you're challenging. They answer the questions. And whoever answered the most questions in the shortest period of time is the winner of the battle, quote unquote battle.
Right.
So this is like gamifying studying for the CPA.
I think it's great. I mean, you know, the part of the gamification in education space is about adding sugar to this so-called medicine that, you know, some people might find difficult or hard. You know, like learning can be tricky, especially if you're not a math person, then you're not going to enjoy math class. But if you've got this really fun game on top of learning this stuff, it might compel you more readily to do something.
Yep.
But it's bodes the question in my mind is, why haven't we seen in the, what is it, 30 years of video game history, a smash hit educational game? And I'm still struggling and being like, maybe the medicine is just too boring. Well, even if you gamify it, well, are you going to say Oregon Trail? I mean, which one are you going to go for?
I'm actually going to go because that was San Diego.
Carmen San Diego. Oh, okay, yes.
That was a really good one.
So now you don't see it. It hasn't been around for like 15 years, and it's, at least I haven't known of it. But Carmen San Diego, where in the world is Carmen San Diego? Video game of the 90s that absolutely was a smash hit.
Yes.
And it was a learning tool.
It had its own TV show.
Yeah. So it can happen, but you have to fool people into it.
Yes.
You know, you can't...
Well, it was like I was saying to Sydney, it's like, if the IP is strong enough, if the game's good enough, then I am going to be compelled even stronger. Like, if Pokemon Go, when it came out, had me doing math equations, I would have done them.
But see, that's the thing. You don't even realize how good of gamification Pokemon Go is.
Right? Why don't I realize?
Because you probably did a lot of math.
Because, well, not even math.
I just I did some, yeah.
Go out of the educational part of it, though. Pokemon Go got more people walking than any other initiative that I can possibly think of right now.
No, I mean, it was great. But also...
Well, some people still do it.
I still play
with Gloria's nieces and nephews. But huge numbers.
But I mean...
But what I'm thinking is, okay, so that was a low... But that's a low barrier to clear. Like, I'll go for a walk. Okay, it's not my favorite activity in the world, but I'll do it in general and I'll do it in life. But like, learning can be a lot harder than that, a lot taxing, and that fear of failure and that like, oh, I'm not good at math.
So you're saying, basically, you're not worried about gamification for Fitbits and watches and Pokemon Go, because the gamification of physical activity is, I think, where we're focused on in today's world. It's today's, I don't know, whatever era, generation, last few years.
Yeah.
It's not in the educational aspect of it as much.
I just feel like there's a lot of hype around gamification in education. You know, there's this promise of, like, kids are so absorbed in these games. We can leverage this to get them to learn things they otherwise wouldn't have spent so much time and effort on. And it hasn't really happened yet. Okay, Oregon Trail was a good example. But again... You know, all you had to really do was do a few clicks and you learned some geography terms and maybe some historical stuff. But doing more difficult things.
I played a lot of Math Blasters in school. That was like our reward for the week was you got to go play Math Blasters, and it was, you were solving equations.
Typing of
in
the
space.
Dead.
Yeah.
The other typing game we just talked about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But again, these are like a few examples. And they're quite narrow, like, kind of fields. I think, you know, I would love to see, you know, that I think VR, you know, you said before AR is probably better. Sometimes VR would be better for some situations. Like, if you were learning engineering and you wanted to just, like, have this huge bridge in front of you and you could mess with the metrics of the bridge and see how it changed, how it moved, you know, it would be great to be learning things in context in a cool fantasy setting, you know? And that would really kind of give
so
that...
So I think that's too overt, though. When you actually have a game where you know it's meant for you to learn, whether it be play around with something or not, it's too overt, and it's always going to be like a learning aid versus a game.
Yeah.
So Steve on the board game thread, and he actually was the first poster on here, and I think it kind of goes to this. So I'm just going to read this verbatim for the first paragraph. My wife and I use a lot of games in education. I actually wrote a whole article on this, but I'll give you the cliff notes. Games do not need to be educational games to be educational. Most educational games are terrible, but games like Through the Ages, A New Story of Civilization are great at exposing kids to all sorts of historical things, and then their own interests will frequently cause them to seek out information about people and things they are not familiar with. Why does Maximilian Robespierre give bonuses to the revolutionaries? This is why. It's like kind of realizing, because, you know, he was a big revolutionary leader.
Right.
And then the education is fun. Math is even easier to find games that use it. Like Sushi Go is great for lower level math skills. And I think the trick here is like Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. When I'm playing it with kids, I'm not doing the math for them. They roll a number. They have to add another number to it.
Right.
It's not hard math. I rolled a 12. I need to add 6. Yeah. Okay. So that's easy enough to do. But if you keep doing it enough, all of a sudden something clicks in your brain where now it's easy to add small numbers together, which is a skill they didn't even realize they were learning. The number of people in my generation that are like, my vocabulary just exploded once I started playing role-playing games because they started using words that I'd never been exposed to before.
Right, right.
Any game that covers a subject that you wouldn't normally look at is like, this is learning something new.
It's also definitely building spatial reasoning skills.
Right.
Think about how many times you're looking at a board, trying to decide how someone can move, what you can move, how your actions are going to affect someone. It's a lot of logical thinking. And then games like, I was thinking of Santorini. Yep. Just think of how much you're looking at how you're putting the pieces together, how it's like, that's engineering and science skills that you're building at a very basic level. But then you can move that up a little bit. I think a lot of games really do have this education to them, but it's not the
It's not so overt.
Yeah, yeah. It's not what they were going for, but you can't play the game without learning a little bit.
But now what we're talking about is learning from games, which is fine and probably its own topic. And it's hard to talk about the two separate, but let's reverse it. So let's say when you're not playing a game, it has nothing to do with a game anymore, so we're not trying to create the perfect educational game, but now you're in the classroom. And Kitty, you're probably closer to this than most, but you know, back in my day, when we did something good, you got a gold star.
Right.
You know, what is that? That's a reward. That's a gamification of rewarding good behavior. And you can do that on all kinds. I mean, heck, what, report cards are a gamification of learning. Oh, you earned an A. You got a high score in French class.
But that's the easiest level of it. And I think, you know, it's gone more sophisticated now. Like we've said, these days you want to have everything that people find fun. Some people are the socializer type gamer. You want to have an ability to interact with other people. Some people want to see the leaderboard. They don't just want the gold stars. They want to see where they fit with their friends and everyone else.
Leveling up.
We actually have a behavior chart in my classroom where everybody starts on green and you have good choices move you up the chart and bad choices move you down the chart. And everyone has their colored clothespin and you can see where everyone is on the chart and they hold each other accountable to it. Yeah.
And it's a leveling up. The leveling up thing. So I do martial arts. And one of the things, if you do traditional martial arts in Japan, there's two belts. There's white and black. But in America, we have many different colors. And especially in kids programs, we have tons and tons of colors. Because
stripes
and all kinds of things. Because earning that next level is motivating. That makes you want to go to class like, oh, I need to earn my third stripe on my orange belt. That there's no reason. It's not like a magic thing once you get that stripe. But it keeps you going because like I want to earn that next level. And never underestimate the ability like leveling up. Our jobs. You want a promotion. What is a promotion? Level up.
I think it would be really interesting to see where it goes in the next few decades because I can really see that sort of collaboration thing taking off within gamification. Like things like co-op games are so good. Like, you know, if like we said on the kind of getting people into the hobby thing, it's a great way to bring people into the hobby because if they're not up to speed with you, you can help them along a bit, you know, and it gives them that taste of it without that kind of high barrier to entry, like, oh, this is going to be too difficult with me, because you can help them along. And I can see, you know, hopefully maybe gamification in kind of video games and things going forward will allow people to do the kind of MMO thing where they're playing with their friends and they're learning in this game together, and they have to all succeed together, and they can kind of help each other out and teach each other.
Yeah.
A lot of teachers are actually using Minecraft in the classroom. I've heard so much about this.
Yeah.
It is because the kids are already so into it. They love it so much. And it's just, you can build whatever. There's this one guy on, I think he has YouTube videos, where he just has these amazing, like, history lessons built in Minecraft. And, like, it's really interesting what they're able to do with these kind of open-ended games that you can build that kind of stuff into.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, there's no end to how well you can motivate somebody using those game concepts. And
But I still am interested in the fact that I don't feel like it's fully taken off, at least in the education space. And maybe it's a funding thing. Maybe they just can't compete with the AAA title people who have all this money, all these great art directors, voice actors, and, you know, educational games don't have all that money and stuff.
I think you'll see it more coming up, because right now there's a ton of, like, toddler and preschool level educational apps out there.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I think as those kids who are growing up on those apps, they're going to grow higher level with them.
This is what we're going to do.
Maybe.
We're going to do an episode on educational games. Because gamification...
We're way off topic. Yeah,
because educational games and gamification are very... they're related in a lot of ways, but they're different topics. So gamification is taking game ideas and pulling it into, like... How do you use things that are typically we use to motivate people in games and motivate people in real life, but motivating people in games to do things that they wouldn't normally like to do, that's another topic, and I definitely want to explore that more, and I only say that because we only have a few minutes left.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. There is crossover, but I see your point, yeah.
Yeah, so I think as far as gamification in general, there's a lot of things we can do and there's still so many more things we can do too. But I think that reward system, that tier system, the unlockables, like once you get to a certain point, now I'm allowed to do this.
I do that. Badge earning achievements.
Yeah. I mean, I do that in like my regular life. It's like, okay, I want to play a game or I want to do something and set up a game and learn this new thing, but I need to do the dishes first. So once I do the dishes, then I can play the game. Even that little thing is a gamification of my own life, of just saying, this is what's important, so this is what needs to happen first. And setting those goals and giving myself that reward.
Did anyone else do the like reading assignment in high school and you would like line up your like bag of Skittles or something and like every three pages I get to eat one? Yeah. Or is that just me?
No, I mean, I've done that thing too where it's like, okay, if I study for an hour, I can watch an episode of TV. You know, those types of things. And those are your own personal goals that you're setting and like your motivation of that. Honestly, I do this. I've done this thing for my entire life where if I don't want to do something, I'm just like, okay, I'll give myself 10 more seconds of being lazy. And I will literally count down in my head, 10, 9, 8. And when I get to 1, I don't even think about it. I just get up and do whatever I was doing because I couldn't motivate myself otherwise. But I had to give myself just a few more seconds of
It's not a bad idea. I might have to use it.
It's like the opposite of the Kimmy Schmidt, where you can do anything for 10 seconds. And that's, I tell myself this while I'm exercising all the time.
She can, like, do anything for 10 seconds?
You can do anything for 10 seconds, right?
Like, I see.
It's only 10 seconds. So you just think of life in like these 10 second increments. So like, I have to run for, you know, however long straight. And you just count in your head to 10. And you're like, all right, I did it for 10 seconds. Now just 10 more seconds. I just need to do it for 10 more seconds. And you count down from 10. You're like, now I just have another 10 seconds until suddenly you're
starting's
done.
The hardest part. And a lot of these gamification things are just kind of getting reminding us to start and enticing us to, let's get that next reward to start.
Build
and do
the habit so you don't necessarily need the gamification to keep you doing it.
Yeah, I think that's the line. Starting it is the hardest part.
Yep.
Anything you can do to just start doing the task, figure that out. And if it's counting back first from 10, great. If it's counting in 10-second intervals, great. Whatever it is, just get up and do it. Great. If I do this, I'm going to be able to invite the friends over and play a 6-hour game of Twilight Imperium tomorrow. Fine. But just start doing it and you'll be amazed at what happens then. Because then you have the opportunity of getting in the zone. And if you get in the zone, it's all from there. Okay, that was a lot of gamification. And I'm adding educational games to, let's see, I think September 12th should be a good episode for that one. We went through and did all of our future episode days for the summer because the summer is going to be really crazy. So we wanted to make sure we knew what it was, but we'll move things around. Post-topic section, a couple new iTunes reviews. I want to give a huge thanks to Slatron11. And Boldar88.
Great names.
I love reading names like that. Twitter and Facebook. We're talking conventions. Every month it seems like we have a convention. To find out where we're at and what we're doing, you can follow us on Twitter. That's at TabletopGameTLK to follow the tabletop. Or you can follow me at GameMeisterChris. Facebook, you can follow us at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. If you're interested in supporting the show, we're going to be giving away some buttons and t-shirts and all of those things. And that money comes out of my pocket minus whatever I can get from Patreon. But if you're interested in doing that, tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon, and you can donate any level you want there. I think I need to add a PayPal donation button for one-time donations. I've had a few people ask me to do that. So
it's a good idea.
Yeah, I'll figure out how to do that. Let's see. And next week is Origins. If you're at Origins, we're probably going to do the thing where every single day we're going to be wearing black t-shirts with our logo on it. So if you see someone wearing a black t-shirt with our logo on it, and especially one of us that might resemble somebody who's on it, come up and say it's hi.
Probably us.
Yeah. Because we want to know, we want you guys to come up to us. Yeah.
I think I have my hairstyle right today.
Even. Yeah. You should keep the a ponytail, right?
It's a braid.
Braid. Yeah,
come keep on, the braid. Chris.
Yeah. I'll be the bald guy. I look skinnier in the logo, but if I turn sideways and hold in my gut, it's close. And Josh is spot on.
Well, except I've grown a beard since the show. The picture,
yeah, maybe a little bit. We'll put a Sharpie in.
A little bit of fuzz there.
Add some whiskers in there.
It's not a huge thing.
All right. So until next week when we talk to you live, Josh, go ahead and take us out.
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us a iTunes review. Email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jill Jam, Shane Paul, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean Kelly, Joseph Lee, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan Phillips, Caliber Brian, and John Lewis. Until next week, when we are live at Origins, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. Maybe fabric pens, and we can just, like, this is me, and write it on the shirt. That could work, right?
I love it.